Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Hannah Riederich. 5 years of career experience, a firefighter paramedic with a department located on the southwest coast of Florida. Initially, Hannah wanted to go into the medical field, but after a year in, she discovered that the current path she was on wasn't it. She had some friends within the service who set her up to do a ride-along with one of the departments near her. As Hannah states, after the 8 hours, she fell in love with the fire service and did everything she needed to set herself up for success. With that said, every individual's journey is never the same. We must choose what we feel is right within ourselves to make us happy. And I truly hope the listeners tune into the gems Hannah drops as she shares her story. As always, none of this would be possible without the fantastic guests who agree to come on and talk shop. Hannah is certainly one of them, and with the mindset she has, I have no doubt she will definitely reach plateaus she never thought could be possible. With that, I present Hannah Riederich.
So my name is Hannah Riederich. I work for a full-time career department on the southwest coast of Florida. I've been in the fire service for almost 5 years. I'm a firefighter paramedic currently. I got into the fire service kind of in a roundabout way. I went to college straight out of high school. Thought I wanted to go into the medical field. Always had an interest in that. After my first year, I decided that this just was not for me. I enjoy school. I'm still in school now, but that kind of schooling wasn't it. And long term, I wanted to do something that was a little more my speed. So I had some friends in the fire service set up a ride along with a department in Central Florida, basically the week after I stopped going to school. And it was Black Friday, so November of 2019. And I was there for about 8 hours and I fell in love with it. The next week when the school opened back up from Thanksgiving break, I went and signed up. I finished up my AA that semester. And then I was a part of the COVID fire school. So I went to fire school at a very unique time. Started in around February and then or March, got a weekend and they shut us down for a couple months. So that was, you know, when you start going, you're really excited for something, you get told it's on hold. It's kind of a little bit of a heartbreak, but, you know, we made it through it, went through it, through the summer, wearing masks, doing the whole nine yards, graduated fire school in December of 2020. And then I got started, early of 2021 and it's been the best decision I've made. No regrets.
Okay. Awesome. Awesome. If I can ask, what was it about the fire service that just attracted you where you're like, this is it. This is what I want to do.
So originally I was, like I said, I was going to school for medical. So the thought of medical calls sounded really cool. And here in Florida, you want to run cool medical calls. You kind of have to be with the fire department because they run the 911 EMS in most places, not all of them. But where I was living at the time, that was the case. So I was like, I'll get into it for that reason. And I went to fire school and I went to the fire station and I did a ride along with them and I went to fire school and I fell in love with the fire side more than the medical now. I love the medical side because I think it's, you know, important and I do take it very seriously, but the fire side has my heart. So I think it's just the constant day-to-day life of you don't know what's coming, the family aspect. Everything the fire service has to offer was everything I didn't know I wanted, but I guess I needed in the long run. So I kind of found a home in it.
Okay.
A purpose.
Okay. Now, I don't know like how all 50 states do the process of getting on, but from my experience in talking to people, Florida is very rigorous in their program. So what did you have to battle or the obstacles you had to face in order to get hired? Because from what I hear, it is very, very competitive.
It's very different. I think we're in a time now, you know, I've talked with people like my peers before and before it was really hard to get hired anywhere. I mean, people would wait years and years. Now it's the recruitment and as far as people getting into the fire service is it's at a changing point. So I don't want to say it's easier to get in because you still have to go through the same stuff. The opportunities aren't there for what you want, right? But as far as like for me getting in COVID time, it was a little different. So I went to fire school for 6 months and that was inclusive fire one and fire two. You had to pass all of it to get both certs. So a little different of a school format. Sometimes they make you go through fire one And then you pass that and you go into Fire 2. The school I went to, it was a, you have a 6-month program. You have to pass every month and, you know, these quarterly testing. And at the end, if you fail, you don't get Fire 1 or Fire 2. You get all of it. So it was very taxing, but absolutely worth it. And then after that, you're certified and, you know, you get your EMT, which is about 3 months. So after all that, you're certified. And then the fun part becomes of now I have to go find a job. Cause I know like upstate, you know, they'll, or up north, they'll do in-house training. Like you get hired with the department, they put you through your training. Florida's a little different. You have to put yourself through school typically, or find a cadet program in a department. Not all of them offer it and they'll pay for you to go to school. But that wasn't really a thing in 2020 from, you know, my experience. It was, you got to go through school and then you'll find a job. So you kind of do everything and then you're done. You're like, okay, now I got to go through the process. So it was, you know, logging on to the National Testing Network, kind of seeing what you want. And at the time I went with the find your job, then find your career mentality, because down here you can switch departments and you don't have to get hired with the department to get the training. You have the training, so you're ready. So now it's getting your foot in the door, getting the experience. So after that, it was, you know, you take the CPAT test, which is usually what most departments require, or now a lot of departments are moving towards their own fitness test that's department based. So I haven't done that yet. With both my departments, I did CPAT, which was a pretty rigorous test. The halyard slipped on the ladder about a foot from my hand, just from grip, and they failed me on the spot, which is a very, you know, you go through fire school and that moment happens and you're like, damn, like I thought I had this. So it was kind of like a little bit of a gut punch. And I had driven from Central Florida down to St. Pete to take the test. So a 10-minute test, I took a drive of 3 hours to come take. So it was brutal. Didn't pass that one. And then I signed up again. I was sick. I failed the second time by 10 seconds. Again, driving from Orlando to St. Pete. And then the next time, the third time I took it, I was feeling a little bit better. I drove from Orlando to Jacksonville because that was the next closest spot with an available opening. This is all in the matter of like a week from each other. And I passed it with over a minute and a half to spare. And that's just all, you know, learning moments, and the drive kicks in. You kind of learn how much you want it when you don't get it the first time. It's that failure builds, right? So through the two failures I did have, I can make excuses for it all day, but it happened. And that's a part of like my story. So I went up there and I trained sick as a dog and I passed it the third time. So once you pass it, now you get the key that kind of opens up your door to start applying for departments. So I threw in an application in the northeast part of Florida, went through the CPAT, I went through the interview process, and I got offered a job there. So it was, for that time, it was pretty quick. Smaller department, they move a lot differently than our bigger departments, right? So the first time, I think it was about a month and a half from the time I put my application into the time I was hitting orientation. And then when I switched departments recently, it was about a 3 to 4 month process. Okay. So it was a lot longer, but you know, more applicants, more background tests. I had to go through a lie detector test, all those different types of things, polygraph. So it just, it depends on where you want to go. So Florida's very unique in that sense.
Okay. With that said, can I ask, and only answer it if you want to, but can I ask why you switched to a different organization? And I only ask that because, you know, we have people that come into the fire service and maybe that organization that they're on, they just either aren't feeling fulfilled or it's just not for them. And that's no shot at the organization. Yep. People have to feel comfortable where they work. So was that a hard decision for you to make?
Oh, it was one of the tough decisions I made in my life. It was a lot of emotions. You know, you go somewhere and anywhere in the fire service, that becomes your second family. Whether you like some of the people or not, right? You are there with them 24 hours. You know the ins and outs of them, and they know the ins and outs of you, in a sense. So, you know, making that decision, I had gone to a fire conference in San Diego, Women in Fire. And I was there for a week. I was doing hot classes. I was, you know, hanging out with a lot of my mentors and my friends. And I got back from that conference. I remember sitting in the back of the truck with my buddy. And he was like, when are you leaving? And I was like, Now, like now. And I just had this like fire ignited me in me over there talking to mentors and kind of seeing what my career path was and what I wanted it to be. And I had this moment where I just sat there in the back of that truck and I was like, it's not here. And that's nothing against, that organization. It just, when you look at what you want from your career, when you start, it is a lot different than what it is after 2 years, after 3 years, you're after your fourth year, it's a lot different. So I just started looking at career progression, things I wanted to do, and how likely it was I was going to be able to accomplish that. And it didn't feel likely. There are people at that department that is their bread and butter. That is what they want to do. And that is awesome. It just wasn't for me. And then, you talk about culture and the type of environment you're in. I wanted to be somewhere where I was going to be pushed. The first department I went to, the orientation was, it was 1 week. And it's a small department. That's kind of what, they do because they have to get you onboarded. They have to get you started. And it wasn't that much of a push for me. And I started, I'm talking to buddies that work elsewhere, and I'm hearing that they went through these 4 weeks, 8 weeks, 12 weeks. And I don't feel fulfilled now. I'm like, I need to do something that's going to challenge me. So I came to a department where it was 12 weeks of pushing yourself and kind of pushing yourself past that limit that I hadn't had yet. And also in that environment that wanted me to do better and was so supportive. And I remember sitting there in my first week of orientation when I switched, and I came home and my wife was sitting here and she's like, how are you liking it? And I was like, this is the best decision I've made. I was like, I am dog tired. I'm hurting in places that I've never felt pain before. I was like, but I'm enjoying myself. And I feel like this is somewhere that I can go above and beyond and be pushed daily and also reach my goals. Because I don't want anything handed to me, right? I want to work for it. I want to have structure and I want to be there doing it with the people that want me there doing it. So overall, I think it was just a career path decision. I hit that 4 year mark and it's a now or never move is what it felt like in that moment. And the now is the best decision.
Okay. No, I love that. And I definitely have no issues with that statement. If there's one key piece of advice you can give to anybody listening that's on the fence, what would be something you tell them?
Oh, that's a tough one. It's something that was told to me very early on in my career when I started, and it was, you don't stay somewhere for friends. I made a lot of really good friends at that department, buddies that I talk to probably every day. And leaving them was the hardest part of leaving that department. Pulls at your heartstrings, that's second family. And then I moved across the state. So it wasn't like I could, I was making the decision to go to a neighboring department and still see them. I was pulling myself from essentially my second family. But you can't stay somewhere for friends. You have to go somewhere that's going to push you because friends will be everywhere. If you made friends one place, you will make them in another place. And if they are your friends, they will stay in contact with you and they will forever be your mentors and your friends no matter what you do. And they're the ones that are going to support you a lot more than you think. They're upset when you're leaving, but to have a friend that supports you in that endeavor is amazing. Really shows you who your village is, and you can't stay there just for them.
Love that. Love that. Okay. All right. With that being said, the fire service is really, it's like other occupations and then it's not. And I say that because you always, in every group, you always have your bad apples, your bad batches. And, being a female coming into the fire service, that's male predominantly, a male-dominated profession. You mentioned earlier you didn't want anything handed to you. You want to earn your keep. So for any other women that are listening, what key piece of advice can you tell them if they're looking at joining the fire service?
So my viewpoint on it changed a lot from the time I went in to the time now, right? I went in expecting to be treated the same, and that's not the case. It didn't really hit me till a year afterward. I passed my probation, and one of the guys on my shift, it was me and another woman that got hired together, one of my best friends. We got hired together, and we're sitting there, and he came in the room, and he said, "I just want you to know that when your applications came across the table, I didn't want women working here." And that was someone that I thought was a mentor in that moment, and I thought I was one of the guys in a sense. But for that whole year, they didn't want us there. That guy didn't want us there. And that is not every single guy, right? Like you have people that are your champions and pushing you through. But in that sense, like you said, there are bad apples that do not want you there. I think it's just always, you always got to do what's best for you, right? If you need help, you speak up. You find those mentors and those people that are going to lift you up and help you. And then in the face of like adversity, you don't let your head fall. You have to hold your head high and know that in that moment, you are doing the best you can with what you have and the resources you've been given. You are no different than the guy that came in right next to you, but somehow mentally in the way they look at you, you are starting from level one and they start at level two. When you do something right, you go to level two, they sometimes go to level four. You're always playing that catch-up game. However, that doesn't change your work mentality. I don't let it define who I am. I'm going to do the same thing every day. You're going to get the same results from me because I'm going to keep pushing myself, regardless of what you think. So I think it's all just a mentality because it really got me down at one point. It was a hard blow when you kind of learn that and you kind of get that reality. But that's not everybody. And there are mentors and there are people out there that will champion you every day. So it's finding those people and then knowing that if you are doing your best and you are trying and you're keeping up with the guy right next to you, then that is more than you can ever do.
Okay, understood. So as a male, of course, in the fire service, you know, when here not too long ago, I actually had a coworker who became a firefighter, and she was assigned on our truck, you know, and when the list comes out, you know, all the guys are talking and you're looking at the names and you're like, okay, like it's a different dynamic. But I will say, to me, the best advice that I can give is for guys who are going to have a female firefighter or officer, driver, whatever on their truck, you don't want to make things awkward. Like if she comes in a room, like don't just stop talking unless it's like something crazy that you probably shouldn't be talking about anyways. But my question to you is for the guys that are listening, what is one advice that you can give if they know that they're having a female, you know, coming to their station?
Be yourself, do what you're doing on a normal day. Because I think we come into this field knowing we are the minority. If we don't rely on ourselves in a sense, I knew I was going to be a minority, but I also wanted to be a part of the team. And that's hard to do when you're on probation, right? You kind of
Right.
sit back and you let the guys dictate it. However, I don't want to make anyone feel uncomfortable. So coming in and then you see people shut down a little bit. That's uncomfortable for me now. Now I don't know where I fit in. I don't know how you guys are, you know, and especially when you talk about like right now I'm in a bigger department. So I switch stations a lot, which is awesome. So I get to see different dynamics. And if you walk into a room where they shut down on you, it's like, ooh, I don't feel like I belong here right now. And that's something, you know, that comes with time. And there's guys that will be the same person no matter what. I want to see them joking with each other because that lets me know this is a fun crew, right? I want to be a part of this. And if they keep that mentality when I walk in, you're encouraging me to want to be myself there. And you're going to get the real version of me. When the guys cower down and they kind of shut down, the female's going to shut down because they know they're making you uncomfortable. If you stay comfortable and confident in yourself and your crew, then you'll get to see like the version of us that isn't trying to push ourselves down. So I would just say, just do what you're doing. Don't change anything because we know we're the minority, but we also want to be there in the same way that you want to be there.
Okay, beautiful. Okay. I'm gonna fast forward a little bit. So you make that huge decision to move across state, you get hired on the department you believe will fit your culture. What was your first day like? What was that first experience like walking through those doors?
So, as far as like orientation or like on shift work again.
On shift work, you finished
On shift work.
orientation, you're done with all that.
So it was so we do here on our probation, we switch stations every 2 months.
Okay.
And that gives you perspective, right? Each station's different. When you work in a big city, territories are different, people are different. The way that they do fire operations altogether, the department follows the same playbook, but there's different considerations when you go somewhere, right? So I think that there's different parts of when you pick a station, you're kind of picking that crew in a sense too. So when I walked in, I went to a very large station, anywhere from, I think, 12 to 17 people there. And now I'm walking in the door. I was greeted with such open arms though. You know, I walked in, one of the best things I had ever heard, and it's just because I didn't hear it anywhere else. It was, you don't focus on the cleaning right now. Your job is to get used to the truck and your equipment. Because I walked in there doing what I thought was best, right? You know, you go through probation, especially when you've already done this. You're like, I'm going to go clean. I'm going to get this done before shift starts. I'm coming in an hour early. I'm going to get this done. And it was, nope, you drop the mop, you go look at your equipment. And I was like, they want me to do better. They want me to learn the craft here. And I had that for a few shifts. You know, you kind of get some downtime. You're like, okay, well, I'll go do this thing real quick. And it's like, you're caught and you're like, nope, go look at the truck. So that was very unique. They wanted me to do better. And one of the other things, I remember dinner the first night. I sat down and I came from an apartment that didn't necessarily cook dinner together every night or do anything like that. It was not what I expected coming out of fire school. But I've been there 4 years. That's now what I think the fire service is. So I sit down for dinner. I cook dinner with my help. I sit down and then I finish my plate and I'm like, okay, it's time for me to get up and start cleaning up other plates. And they said, it is family time, sit down. And then I'm like, this is family time. This is the fire service that 4 years ago I thought I was getting into. Even day one in, they wanted me to be a part of the crew as much as I could. Now I'm still sitting there very quiet, but I'm taking in, I'm looking at how they interact with each other. And the conversation isn't just about work. It's about like their families and things like that. And I'm like, this is the environment. It just like kind of reassured me that I had made the right decision. And I haven't had anything but that experience at every station I've gone to now. So it's very heartwarming and I guess refreshing in a sense. So, you know, they kept doing their normal thing. They were joking with each other. And that let me know that this crew is like very close and they're not shying away just because I'm there. And yeah, it was amazing. So I still get that experience everywhere I go now. And it, yeah, it's great.
No, I love that. Because, you know, far too often, some of the individuals in the fire service, we have it backwards. Like the new person's going to come in and if that toilet's not clean, if that coffee's not made, if the floors aren't, and I'm not saying like that's not important, but that shouldn't be numero uno on the list is they have to clean. And so I love the fact that your organization was like, hey, like, great, good for you, awesome, but you're actually going to focus your time on learning the rig because that's what's important. That is our job. So absolutely love hearing that.
Yeah, and it's cool, you know, when you come in and you have experience, you kind of have to bring yourself back to square one in a sense, which I loved my probationary year at my first department and I'm embracing it fully here. You know, it is weird coming in with some experience, but they didn't let that deter them from giving me the chance to learn here from square one. And I think coming in, I was worried that, you know, with experience, they're not going to give me the same treatment. But I'm getting the same treatment. You know, they're still putting the care and the time into building me into their department's way. And that's, I think, very important that a lot of, you know, places don't necessarily do. And I'm very lucky to be a part of that.
Awesome. Okay. My first official, I guess you want to say, type question is, what does the term aggressive, as in firefighting, mean to you?
So aggressive, we throw it around a lot. Very big on safety, right? So I think there is a difference between aggressive and safe and aggressive and stupid in a sense. You can say you're aggressive, but are you being aggressive in the sense that you are doing the job and keeping your people safe and keeping yourself safe? There is a part of ego that I think gets thrown into aggressive that should not be there because we are there for a job and our job is to, you know, protect lives, property, the community, but we are also there to protect each other and not put each other in a situation when it's not, you know, risk a lot, save a lot, wrist little to sable, right? If there's nothing there, then we're not going to push it. And there is times when you push it, but I think there is a fine line, and that's where having a good, not necessarily I say officer, but a good leader that's going to show, you know, the backseat guy, so me now, right? This is a situation where we are going to be aggressive and quick, but this situation is not one that we're going to put ourselves in harm's way with. So I think it's a fine line. You can be aggressive, but you can be an aggressive and stupid, or you can be aggressive and safe and conscious of your surroundings.
Yeah.
But that's not to say that this is like, I'm not pushing like a safety culture. You know, you hear that a lot of the safety culture. And that's not at all what I believe is top priority all the time. You need to push. You just need to do so with the thought in mind of, it's not me, it's the guy behind me, it's the guy behind them, it's everyone else that's going in. So, yeah.
Okay. You mentioned earlier that you attended a conference, Women on Fire, was that correct?
Women in Fire.
Women in Fire, sorry. And my question to you is, how were you exposed to that? Because for me, it took, like, I always heard of FDIC, so I knew that, but I never knew there was other conferences and things outside of that. So who exposed you to that?
This one's a weird one. I first went to Women in Fire. They do a conference every 2 years, and it's their international conference. They have people come in from outside the country. It's a great environment. But I went to it first in 2022. I was in the middle of paramedic school, and I was at a low in my career, right? You know, you go to paramedic school, and that's your whole life for the year. And I had people in the department that I was in that were not fond of me going to paramedic school. So in a sense, I was going through this like shunned process, but I think I'm doing better, right? Like I think I'm helping the community. I'm doing what's next for my career. So I was just at a low, and I was scrolling through Instagram, and this ad popped up for Women in Fire, and it happened to be in Orlando, which is, you know, Florida. So I was like, oh, that's not that far. Expensive conference, but I was like, I need something right now to lift me up. So I paid for it out of pocket. I didn't tell anybody I was going. I just did it on my own. I was like, I'm taking a day off paramedic school. This is how bad it is. I need to go. So I went, not really knowing what to expect. I'd never heard of it. I just dove into it online a little bit. I went down there and I met some of the best mentors and friends that I still rely on to this day. One of them being Tyler Barrett, who was on your podcast recently, sat down with them. And I just had this like feeling of, wow, like these ladies understand it. Everything that I didn't have words for right now, we're talking about. And I feel kind of seen in a sense. So that was a very pivotal moment in my career. And I will tell every woman that I work with and every woman in the fire service, it's something you should go to. Not, you know, you can go to Orlando Fire Conference, you can go to FDIC, you can do all these different types of hot classes. They are all beneficial. But in terms of networking and finding people that are like you and learning from people that are, you know, like us, women, it's different. I mean, I took a class there and all the classes are taught by women. I took a ladder class in 2024. I can throw a 24, you know, it's not like a big deal. You learn it when you're, you know, you start, I can do it. I go take this class and I learned from this woman who worked for San Diego Fire, 5 foot tall, threw it better than I've ever seen anyone throw it. And it's all technique, right? And we sit in this 4 hour class and we go through it. And I'm like, no one showed me that. And there's a difference between technique and muscling through it, right? But when you work with a bunch of men, they show you the muscle through it. You're just going to do it. You're going to do it. And I can do it. But could I do it as well as I up until that point? No, I couldn't. So it was, it's a pivotal moment in learning from people that are like you with your body type and your mentality, and having to overcome, you know, we don't have the strength that most guys do in the fire service. We rely a lot on technique, perfected technique, step by step. So going to something like that really hammered that in for me. So I came across it on Instagram and I am now, you know, a member of it. I pay some dues to it. I go to the conference and I will go every single year that it's available just because it was that impactful.
Okay. That's awesome. It's awesome. I am not going to act like I know it all. I never want to portray that, but I have a question for you.
Sure.
I'm assuming it is strictly just for women, like men cannot attend this conference.
Men can go. So
Okay.
it is open. So I thought kind of the same thing. I was like, it's gotta be just for women, right? But every time I heard someone mention, they're like, no, men can come. It's something about the title of Woman in Fire that, naturally men are like, oh, I'm not going to that. However, I think if it is in your state and you have the opportunity to go and watch some of it happen, especially if you are an instructor, you're an officer, and you really want to lean into how to help the woman in your department, it is probably life-changing for you. It'll give you a lot of perspective. And I know it's going to be in Austin, Texas in 2026, so next year. So if anyone's in that area, send an email, see if you can just come in, buy even like a general admission pass. I'm not sure how it works if you don't want to take the classes. I think just seeing it is a big thing for the fire service.
And like I said, I'm also a minority, of course, hence, yes, skin color. But I mean, outside of that, like, I don't know about that. You know what I mean? Like, I don't hear about it, but I always like to plug it for people because, the fire service is forever changing. The fire service
Absolutely.
has, history-wise, historically, the fire service has always been predominantly male, white dominated. But now, we have all kinds of races, ethnicities, genders coming into the fire service. And like I said, you're always gonna have that few, that group that's gonna do what they do. But like I love seeing the progressiveness because in my experiences, true firemen don't care what you look like, what your gender is, as long as you are there to do the job and they see like this person is all in, then you're accepted. So
Absolutely.
I love that you talked about that.
Yeah, and I think that's, finding, like I said, finding the people that are your champions, and that, like, there are people that I have walked in the door and they have treated me the same as the guy next to me from day one. There are people that have had to warm up to the idea, and there are people that will never warm up to the idea. But it can't stop your personal progress. The minute you let it take over is the minute that you will drown. You have to keep swimming.
Definitely. Okay. Let's switch gears to wellness and truly being there for one another. Obviously, you've had a profound experience where, you got into a department where you just were like, this wasn't it, and so you switched and you got to a place now that's now your second family. And let's talk about actually being there for one another, because I'm sure you've seen it already. The fire service can be a very positive brotherhood, sisterhood type experience, but also we can eat each other up. We can eat, our own alive. So what's your take on wellness and truly being there?
I think it's pretty simple. It's one of those things that when you know it, right? I think it goes beyond making the phone call after something's happened and checking on someone else. I think it starts from day one. When you walk in and you introduce yourself to someone and you have those open conversations, that is being there for one another. Seeing someone when they come in and you're like, they're a little quiet today. Maybe they didn't have a bad call, right? You haven't seen anything that's like, oh, I need to check on them. But they are just not talking. Maybe they're tired. But I think being there for one another is always extending that arm, even when it doesn't seem like there's a physical, tangible reason in front of you to do so. It is understanding your people, learning what makes people tick, and learning about that person. I mean, you can spend one day with someone and see kind of their reaction if they're open, right? You can see how they interact with other people. You can see how often they smile. You can see the pep in their step. And on day two, you notice something slightly off. No matter what rank you are, no matter how long you've known someone, it's being like, are you doing okay today? Or how was your weekend? It's little things like that that I think it's missed. A lot of times we talk about, reaching out when you see something happening. It's being proactive instead of reactive that I think a lot of people miss. It's showing that you care before the blow up happens.
No, for sure. Okay. As far as this is a personal question for me, as far as becoming a paramedic, how long does it take? And Is that something you wanted to do? Because like, for us, where I work at, we're first responders, EMT basics, and we assist the paramedics whenever, they arrive on scene. And some of the things that they have to do, it's just like, I don't want to do that. But is that something that you really wanted to do?
So when I originally got into the fire service, my brain was thinking I was getting into it for the medical. So there is a part of me that really did want to do it. But at the time, my department was a BLS non-transport, right? So being a medic, there was no incentive to do it. You could be an EMT for your entire career and you would be fine. But there's a part of me that knew that being a paramedic was something I wanted to do. Whether I was going to use it there and be there for my entire career, because at the time I thought I was, or not. So it was a lot, but I would do it again in a heartbeat. It was a year of school. So in Florida, we run it's joint EMS and fire in most places. Even at my department, up north, northeast side of Florida, it was you're still running the medical calls as an EMT on the fire, on the engine or the truck. So it was a most of the programs are all fire-based scheduled programs. So you go to work one day, you get off at 7, 8 a.m., you start school at 9 a.m., you go till 5 p.m. The next day you're in clinical for 12 hours. And then it rotates. You go back to work, school, clinical. You did it for about a year. Mentally exhausting. However, even up there, what I can say is, we're running our medical calls and we would show up first because just the location of our station and everything. And then the surrounding county would send a rescue. While I didn't have paramedic equipment, I don't think the equipment is necessarily the biggest part of that. It's knowledge base, knowing what questions to ask, when to ask them. And then what I started to notice, and me and one of my best friends, we went together at the same time. And so went through medic school and everything. We're on the same shift. What we started to notice is that when the rescue would show up from the surrounding fire department with their two paramedics, if we would give them a pass down, with time of going through paramedic school and after paramedic school, they started to trust what we were saying. They weren't doubling back on questions that we had already asked. We're saying, hey, this is what's going on. This is what we think we need to do. And they would trust us. And that's something that we hadn't had because we were doing stuff, that we would tell them our pass down and they would go, yeah, okay. And they would turn around and they would do the same thing we just did. So that's delaying patient care in a sense, right? But also, when you're taking it from some EMTs, it's a little different when you're a paramedic. You think you have the more of the skill set, the knowledge base to ask the questions that need to be asked and when they need to be asked and kind of elicit the answers that you're looking for. So it made a big difference, I think, in patient care and for the community that I was working in at that time. And then now it's a little different because we are ALS, still non-transport, but I do ride in a rescue now. I love it. I think it's a different part of the career. It takes a lot of problem solving and different things like that, that I think with career progression, it'll lend a hand in as far as handling, stressful situations, thinking with a clear mind, being able to delegate tasks, all that comes with being a paramedic, if you take it seriously and you do it the right way. So I
Okay.
think later on in my career, I think this also pays into like how I look at fire scenes, taking a step back, breathing for a second, and just noticing little things, noting to delegate tasks in a certain way. I think later on in my career, if I progress, that's something that's going to translate very well.
Okay. Do you find it difficult to master each skill? Because like I said, you're a paramedic, so I'm sure. Like, I think my Con Ed is bad. I can't imagine Con Ed for a paramedic, but between that and still remembering whenever you're assigned to ride the fire truck, like how to force a door, make sure I know how to stretch a line, because you hear far too often individuals that do both, but their department runs a lot of EMS calls, skills begin to diminish. So how do you find that balance?
It's all what you make it, right? I could sit here and say, well, it's really hard to find the balance, but I have 24 hours in a shift. I'm not on, running medical calls 20 for 24 hours, right? It's also taking the initiative to, sharpen your knife in each skill in a sense. So yeah, I'm gonna study my medical stuff and I'm gonna really harp on that right now because I'm really new. But the fire training, it doesn't stop. The medical stuff, it's very important. So is the fire stuff. Not knowing the fire stuff, and what scares me is if I'm not ready and they put me on back on, you know, the engine. I'm having an engine day, and I haven't done anything in a while. I'm not only putting my life in line, I'm putting my brothers' or sisters' lives in line because on the line because I'm not staying proficient. When you decide to go to paramedic school, you are taking on the responsibility of wearing two hats, but making sure that neither of those hats are sitting on the shelf for too long, if that makes sense. You have to stay sharp. It's an extra responsibility, but I think it's absolutely worth it. It takes time, to learn both and to stay proficient in both. You have to stay on top of both. But the beauty of this job is you are there for 24 hours. So I can study my medic stuff in the morning or between calls, and I'm running calls. So I'm doing that all the time. The medical stuff gets hard to set aside because you're doing it so often. The fire side, we don't run as many fires as they used to, right? It's all training based. You have to stay on top of that. And that's, you know, for me, it's going to conferences. It's making sure that I'm working out every shift. I'm working out off shift. I'm putting my gear on. I am going down to the training tower, and I'm going to go force a door today because I haven't done that in a while. When there's training with like the companies, if we're going down there, I want to be involved. Even if I am on the rescue that day, I want to be there and I want to be doing the fire stuff. You have to wear both hats, and you have to not let one sit on the shelf for a while.
Love that. Okay. And does your department utilize your rescue wear? Because some rescues are just that. They're dedicated rescues for first responders calls and things like that. Are you allowed to run fire calls or,
Yep. So we are on the list. So when the call comes out, there'll be a rescue assigned to it. When it goes to a working structure fire, you get a second rescue. So where I am, we do it a little bit different. I was used to kind of where I was in the northeast side of Florida. Their rescues up there are kind of like your search crew, two
Okay.
people, water can. When I came down here, they do something called X-ray. So your medic and your EMT split. So your EMT will go with the first engine and help back up the line, and the medic is going to stage medical equipment, and then they task up with the first truck driver, and you go soften the structure, you give a Charlie side report, you turn off utilities, you ladder the building, you're doing things like that. And then as soon as that job's done, you can go to command and kind of let them know, like, hey, X-ray is complete, you know, utilities are off, do you have another assignment? And from there, they can assign you to go search with the first truck driver. It's all very pliable. And it's kind of what you make it, you know? So it's a cool spot to be in. So I'm excited for that. So you still get to go to fires, and it's all just based on, you know, the card. If you're running a high-rise structure, you guys are staying together and you're taking bottles up and you're going to the fire floor. You're running a residential, you're splitting. So it varies, but we still do run the fires.
Okay. No, that's awesome. I always like to hear how different departments do things, and hearing that makes 100% sense. Okay.
Yeah, it's a unique position, but I'm enjoying it.
Okay. You wanted to talk about the schedule debate. So I'm assuming, listening to you talk, you guys work 24 hours.
We do. Yep.
Is it 24/72, 24/48?
So right now my department is a 24/48 with a 3 week R day, Kelly day, kind of, you know, whatever the language you want to use for it. But every seventh shift we get a 24 off. So, like mine's Wednesday, so I'm on my R week right now. I haven't worked since Sunday. Great schedule. I came from somewhere I was strictly 24/48, no Kelly day, nothing like that. So it's very refreshing to have this, right? I am largely involved, and I like researching sleep. I think it's very important for the fire service, right? And when you look at the 24/72 debate, it's important. It's been a long time coming. There is no department out there that is running less calls. There are only departments that are running more calls. No one is running the same. No one is running less than they did 10 years ago. So, you know, it's the, what is it? The saying of 100 years of tradition unimpeded by progress,
Right.
right? So we're at this pivotal point where something needs to change. And you kind of hear both sides of the coin, right? Like, the biggest thing I hear when I talk about 24/72 is a lot of people are like, well, that's less days at work. We're already not working a lot. We're missing training. My argument, and this is, you know, Hannah's perspective, if I'm working 24, 48, I'm dead tired. You know, there's studies showing that you don't retain information, you're less likely to get hurt. More likely to get hurt, more likely to suffer a cardiac event, things like that. So is it safer to have less training days that are more effective or have more training days that are less effective in that sense? It's a hot topic. And I think, you know, you can relate it to everything. You talk about recruitment and retention. Recruitment, fire departments that are switching to that 24/72, they are leading the charge in recruitment right now. They are seeing upticks in applications. They are seeing retention benefits of it. So, you know, in Florida right now, there are a lot of positions open. Everyone needs firefighters. Do you want to be at the top of that list for getting the best people and the people that want to do the job and want to work for your department? Or are you getting the bottom of the list because they didn't get the department with the 24/72 and now you're their backup? So it plays into everything. I look at longevity of a career, right? And I think one of the things I didn't realize about the fire service is like, yeah, I knew we didn't sleep, but you don't truly know how much it affects you until you're doing it. There are days that I come home and my wife's like, I don't know how you're gonna do this for 30 years. And I'm like, I don't know. Like it's bad. I'm stumbling my words. I can't remember what she told me 5 minutes ago. I'm on scene and I'm like sitting there, I'm like, I know this. Just give me 1 second because my brain is lagging. So I think, you know, looking into sleep, looking into our shift schedule is one thing. I think looking into the way that we wake up our firefighters is super important. So the 24/72 debate, there's also this shift change time debate, where instead of starting shift at 8 a.m., let's start it at 7 p.m. You know, things like that. Because there are departments that are showing success in that. And there's a lot of studies going on right now that are looking into that doesn't cost the department anything. Just change your time. It's a little more natural for, you know, us to go home tired and go to bed at 8 p.m. than it is for us to come home and take a 4 hour nap or push through another 12 hour day.
For sure.
So there's a lot of different things that go into that. And it's a lot easier for departments that have Kelly days and funding and the personnel to switch over to that than it is somewhere that's starting with a 24/48. You look at departments that are doing 48/96 too, because that's the other thing. It's like, oh, let's switch to a 48/96. You're cutting the cake the same exact way. You're still working the same exact amount of hours. And then you look at studies that people are crashing vehicles and accidents are happening. It's happening in that second 24-hour shift. So is that really benefiting your department? Yeah, you're getting more days at home in a row. You're not getting more days at home. And that's just, you know, it's all how they want to frame how they're cutting their cake. Just giving us more time at home, more sleep, is the biggest thing. And then I'll go on a tangent of, you know, the tones. Tones are horrible for us. They're god awful. One of the things that I've kind of fallen into on my off days is I work with a company called EaseAlert. Have you ever heard about it before?
I have not. I've heard of a company called Locution, but I'm assuming EaseAlert probably does something where instead of jarring firefighters out of their stations and their bedrooms, they do some sort of like slow ramp up.
It's ramp up and it's tactile. So like wearing a wristband that vibrates. It's like taking a tone where it's like pouring a bucket of ice water on you versus your mom coming in your room and shaking you awake and saying it's time to get up. So there's things like that. There's a gold standard of schedules, 24/72. There's a gold standard of firefighter alerting, tactile, and not waking up with the jarring tones or the fluorescent white lights that wake you up. So there's things that departments can do that are cost effective in a sense to help their people and help out with longevity, retention, recruitment. All of that leads into how we are treating our firefighters on a daily basis. You know, people go to places, I want to go somewhere because I want to run fires. People stay somewhere because they're being treated the right way. You know, we all want to run fires. We all want to do the cool things. But at the end of the day too, we all want to be treated and know that we're cared for. And we want to know that our department's putting the best into us for our long-term health. We want to be able to retire and have that 20 years, that early retirement that we're all promised and bought into.
No, that's 100% facts. And I'll say, so, our the station I'm at now, is our newest station, and they have a different system of how we get alerted for calls. And I can tell you, my hand to God up in the air. When we get calls, or I should rephrase it, since I've been there, and I've been there 2 years, I have not been jarred out of bed yet. Because like when the tones go off, it's like a weird bell, but it's a soothing bell that it hits, and then the lights slowly come on and they're red. And then all we have is we have a woman's voice that says ladder six. And then the mic opens up, and then you hear what dispatch is what the call is. The only time you might get jarred is if the station radio volume's up loud, and so like the speaker, the dispatcher comes out loud. But as far as what we got when we get a call, I literally I just open my eyes. I'm like, okay, we got a call.
It's so much better for you. I
Yes.
mean, studies are showing now, like that with like the tactile, the e-alert, it's firefighters are saying they feel better, they feel more tactically ready to respond to calls by like a 92% margin. And then heart rate, your heart rate's not jacking up that 50, 60 beats a minute. It's going to 30, and then you're recovering better. And you think long term, we talk about like cardiac health in the fire service, neurological health, leading into like PTSD. Fertility, everything like that, it comes back to sleep. A lot of it does. And that's something, we put a lot of time and effort into cancer initiative over the past like 20 years, right? Same with mental wellness. But there's a aspect of that that is so new and it's kind of controversial, and it's sleep that leads into all of those things that we haven't changed. The fire service itself has changed schedules 100 times. They used to work 7 days, right? And then it goes to, okay, you're gonna work 24 on, 24 off, 24 on, 24 off. Okay, now we've gotten to the 24, 48. Now we're doing Kelly days. And now we're at this, next step of we have to change with the times, and it's going to that 24, 72 and waking up our firefighters safer.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree with you. Unfortunately, and I say unfortunately in a good way, I am gonna move stations and go back to the bell that's jarring and the white light, and it's like, ugh. But one of my things I am gonna do, whenever I get there, I would like to have a nice constructive conversation with our fire chief and talk about maybe seeing how we can implement other stations to, because like I said, I like to run calls, but I don't like getting jarred out of bed. Like that's not, it's not good for you. It's really
It's not.
not.
It's we wear our SCBA to protect us from inhalation of carcinogens. What do we do about our sleep? There's really not much right now. It's making sure you're taking care of yourself off shift, but also what are we doing on shift to take care of ourselves? And one of the interesting things I've come across is the Fire Service Journal of Leadership. 2023 or four, they released a study, and it was like different occupational hazards and behavioral hazards. And then it had acute and long-term effects. And it listed everything from sleep, culture, eating habits, weight, everything like that. And like 15 different effects of it, which is like getting burns, getting cardiovascular disease. And the only two things that hit almost every single factor in there of you can get burned, you can get a musculoskeletal injury, you can have cardiac death, was sleep. And the only one that beat it was culture. And I think that those go so hand in hand because our culture around sleep is not great. It's getting
No.
better.
Yes.
I think we're improving overall, and I'm excited to see where the next 5, 10, 15 years go. But those are the two main factors that can cause a crap load of injuries. And haven't changed sleeping culture.
Yeah. And n not to continue being a dead horse, this will be my last statement on that. But I also believe that some individuals think it's a rite of passage to like, I know dudes who they will come, like when I used to work at a part-time department, they would come into work, you know, because it was a part-time gig for them, but they would get off shift their full-time job and come in looking like zombies. And I'm like, how many after midnight? And they'd be like 10, 12. And I'm just like, but some firefighters see that as like a badge. And I'm not saying like it's okay, yeah, if you are assigned to a truck or a station that runs like an absurd amount of calls, more power to you. But we also have to think, what is that doing to ourselves that we're not seeing? Like
Absolutely.
I mean, I'm saying it's cool. Trust me, I get it. Like a badge of honor, if you run 6,000, 7,000, 8,000 calls a year, great, absurd, but it's not good for you. Like I would have conversations with dudes who would be like, they had no idea how they got home. They couldn't remember how they got home.
It's, and at the end of the day, I'm here to spend time with my family, and things like that at the end of the day are taking time away from my family. Every little thing that I do, I'm like, I gotta make sure I do this. I gotta make sure I prioritize this because at the end of the day, I wanna come home and I wanna enjoy my retirement with my family. It's not my time anymore. It's my family's time that I'm wasting if I'm not being smart about things like that. And that's just, one of the things that I think will change with time. Culture around sleep, it's getting better. It'll get there.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Let me see the question I wanted to ask you. Which characteristic holds more weight in your opinion? Let me full actually I shouldn't know these questions because I created them. But years of service, education, work ethic, or on the job experience?
I'm gonna say work ethic every day. Because you can have on the job experience, but if you don't work to perfect your craft every day, I don't think it stops when you hit 5, 10, 15, 20 years. That's something you have to stay on every single day. And I respect, experience like no tomorrow. You're here, you're doing it, you've done the thing, right? But I also want to work with someone that's gonna keep up with that. They're gonna take me under their wing and they're going to work with me to get me there. I think all too often we hit a point, at least I've seen it in the fire service, where someone has 15 years and that is like a pass to sit in the recliner, not participate in training, do the bare minimum. And I think to a sense, you earn your place, but you don't get to keep your place if you don't keep earning it, right? Very controversial, and I'm aware of that, but I want to work with people who are doing their best every day, that care that the people below them are doing their best and that they're doing their best to train them up and keep up with them. So I think work ethic, I think education is a all-encompassing, you can look at education as your traditional 2-4 year degree. You can look at it as you're going to conferences, you're taking all the classes. That's important. I think staying up to date on classes and participating in educational opportunities are something that everyone should do if they have the opportunity to. It creates a better view of the world for you and the department and interdepartmental, relations that go on and how your department runs. But at the end of the day, I would rather work with someone that's working their butt off every single day to be better than work with someone who has taken the card and sat down for the past 5 years.
Love that. Love that. Okay. A topic that you mentioned near and dear that you wanted to hit on, and I want to let you have the floor on it. Mentorship and putting everything together through your experiences going through a leadership program. I mean, I think more departments are seeing it, but we definitely need classes or conferences, for current and aspiring officers to be the best version of themselves because the fire service, our organizations do a great job in making sure we can give a proper size up, know how to put the fire out, tactics and strategies. But when it comes to being a leader, problem solving, issues with our personnel, like I think that's where we're not really hitting the bar. So with that being said, I'm gonna let you have the floor on the mentorship side.
So leadership, it's a heavy topic in the fire service, right? We throw it around a lot. I think there is a difference between a leader and a manager and a boss. A leader is going to make you want to do the job. They're not going to tell you to do the job. They're going to make you want to be better, not you have to do this to be better. There's a fine line between that, right? If you have someone slacking off, you need to pull them back up. But if you lead someone in the direction the right direction, they're going to do it on their own any given day. And a lot of that comes to soft skills of knowing how to talk to your people, knowing how to read your people, knowing what makes them tick. And I know I've said that a few times, but it's a lesson that I learned. And I don't think anyone is too young in the fire service to learn these soft skills, because all it is it's years of practicing it, getting better at it, failing at it, I think is an important topic. The sooner you start to implement leadership and soft skills into your firefighters from day one, the better they'll be at day 10 when they're sitting in the hot seat. And if they never get a chance to learn that, then when they are in that hot seat, it is going to be, it can be very catastrophic, right? You can be the best officer as far as reading a building and knowing where to place your hose line and knowing tactics. But if you can't talk to your people and gain your people's trust, that's a missing part right there. I want to do good because my officer is inspiring me to do good. I want an officer that's going to just in the morning say, good morning, how's your day going? You know, I want someone that's checking in on me. I want to do that for them. It's very translatable, right? And you talk about like mentorship. It's one of the topics that is near and dear to my heart, because I don't think I would be where I am if mentorship wasn't so pushed on me when I was starting. A lot of people look at mentorship as I need to find someone that I want to be, one person, right? I think your mentorship web and your mentor web can be infinite. It doesn't have to be someone in your department. It doesn't have to be someone your rank. I mean, I have firefighters in departments all over Florida and across the country that, you know, with sometimes less experience than me, sometimes a lot more, that will know something about a topic that I don't. And it's being able to pick up that phone and call them. They can be your friends, they can be strictly mentors, or they can be both. So I think growing your web is important, and then always looking forward to your next step. You can be a good firefighter knowing how to be a firefighter. You can be an amazing firefighter knowing what your lieutenant or your driver is looking for, right? And helping them in that sense. I can place a hose line, but if I don't know what my officer, you know, is thinking in their head as far as fire conditions and what their next step is, I can't help them complete that. So it's always, you know, finding mentors at your level, finding mentors that are officers, finding mentors that work in sometimes administration, and it's doing it, I think, outside of your department is very beneficial. You can look at the way your department does it and you can make that your world, or you can look at outside resources and take that and mold your department to be better in a sense and mold yourself to be better. And you don't get that from staying in your bubble. You have to step outside of your bubble and your comfort zone to be able to get that view that a lot of people miss. And it starts day one. You know, lieutenants and officers should be open to talking to the firefighters and showing them what they're looking at, showing them their thought process. I mean, I have a lot of mentors that aren't in the state that are officers elsewhere, and I'll call them for the smallest little thing that I think is stupid, but they will talk about it because they know how important that mentorship and passing on that knowledge is. And it's important to me to, you know, always reach out for that and know that there's an open door. So I would encourage everyone from day one, or if you haven't had a mentor yet, or someone that you can look at and be like, that's my mentor, started at year 10. It's very important to learn the skills above you as soon as you can, so you can perfect them, learn as much as you can, and move on.
Okay. Love that. Love it.
I always, and I know you're still very young into the fire service, but I always ask the guests this question, and I just want to hear your take and your vision for yourself. So with that being said, when you decide to hang it all up, where would you like to see yourself in the fire service?
Oh man, that's a tough one, right? I think it's changed from day one coming in to now, and I think it could change again very well tomorrow. I really like the aspect of, I don't say politics in the fire service, politics are there, right?
Unfortunately.
They're there, whether you like it or not. So I think, I'd like to be a chief in some capacity at some day. I truly believe in helping those below you and leading from the bottom in a sense, and hearing your people. And, you know, I've seen people promote and I've had this feeling, and someone put it into great words one time and everyone's heard it, but if not you, then who? And if not now, then when? And, you know, you learn by seeing what you don't like more than you do by seeing what you do like, right? So there's things in the fire service that I would like to accomplish and do. And you don't necessarily need any type of title to do that, right? You can do that day one coming in, no matter what you want to do. But I think if I could make it to some kind of chief level one day where I, you know, can guide people and guide future leaders in the fire service, that would be ideal for me. But if I made it to senior firefighter and I'm helping, you know, the first year people coming in, that's a job well done right there. Somewhere where someone can look up to me and I can guide is a job that I want to be in when I'm leave.
Yeah. And it's, to me, it's the fact that, you know, regardless, it sounds like definitely you have the mindset of regardless, whatever position, wherever you're at, that's the whole point, you know, passing it forward. We can expect the future of the fire service to continue the traditions we have or the culture we have if we don't show that to them.
Absolutely.
You know, like it, you know, you hear the this generation, we need to like kill that noise. Like that generation is going to portray what they see. So if they see how you act, you're standoffish, you don't want to do anything, then they're going to be like, well, when I was a fireman, my officer didn't do this. So now that they're an officer, it's just, it's a cycle. Everything in the fire service is a cycle. Like really.
Absolutely.
High hose beds. Now everything's low hose beds. Schedules are a hot topic. Like it's always,
100%. That's exactly what this is. And I think it's just, you know, if you get to the point where it's like, see one, do one, teach one. If I can get to the point where I'm up there and I'm teaching one, but I'm also seeing and learning and doing at the same time, then that's, you know, that's a career that I think everyone should strive for at some point.
Absolutely. Absolutely. With that, I'm going to give a shout out to Tyler. Tyler, thank you for putting me in contact with you, Hannah. I told Tyler this, like, you know, privately, but I'm willing to say it here openly. Like, you would be amazed on the amount of females that I'll see and I'll reach out to. And it's either they say yes, but never do anything, or they see the message and never reply back. And I get it. Not everybody wants to put themselves out there, but my viewpoint, my perspective is there are many females out there who are doing the damn thing. And I would just like to show them a little recognition because, as stated earlier, with the fire department, it's male, like male dominated, male instructors, male cadre groups. Like, I'm not saying there aren't females in there, but it's not, it's not being shown enough. And so the females that I have been fortunate to have on have all kicked ass. So Tyler, I want to say thank you for having Hannah on here to add to that list. Hannah, thank you for accepting the invite, for not thinking I was a stalker or trying to sell you some weird things, or if this is a scam. Cause like, I'll call people and they're like, how'd you get my number? Who is this? And I'm like, hold on, let me explain like what I'm doing. And then they're like, oh, okay. But thank
Best
you for coming
ever.
On. Thank you for coming on and accepting this invite, letting Absolutely. Me share your story, hear your story. And I wish you nothing but success, Hannah, going forward.
Awesome. Thank you. I appreciate being on here and having the time.
Yes. Thank yes, you. No. Thank you.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.